Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bus Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 11th, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded as we do for all the meetings, and we put the audio of the meetings on our website. For people who are joining through phone calls, please note that you can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six. If you would like to make any comments, you can press star nine, and that will raise your virtual hands and lower your virtual hands when you, if you press star nine again. People joining through video conference, you do know that you can click on the hand icon to raise your virtual hands, and you can do so by going to the participant list. At the bottom, you would see options, raise hand, yes, no, so and so forth. And you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. We do have interpreters with us on this call. Therefore, when speaking, I would request everyone to please state your name first and then your comment. It helps them do their job well. It also helps anyone listening on the phone calls knowing who's speaking. Anybody listening to the meeting audio, it helps them as well. At this point, I will take a roll call of the committee members. So the roll call for today's BRS meeting goes as follows. Elwar Ariza Silva. Donis Bush. Excuse me, I believe Mary Kay is having trouble. So I would send her a message saying to reconnect.
I see her.
Yes, I see her. She is on mute also. Chino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy. I see Rico is on. Melanie Jackson.
Just to confirm, you'd like to call?
Is Melanie on the call? Not yet. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Mary Kay is going to rejoin, so I will mark her present. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg informed us that he might be a little late joining. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelfort. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Semenoff. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. Now for everyone's convenience, I will go ahead and read the agenda out loud. We just completed the order and roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approving the meeting agenda for today's meeting and approving the prior meeting minutes. We will have Lynn Bowersox join us shortly. She is the Senior Vice President of Customer Service, Communication, and Marketing. Share information with us. We will have William Jones from Arlington Transit share some information about the ART buses. John Zarbo is the Section Chief of Operations for Fairfax Connector. He will be joining, if not already joined, to give us information about Fairfax Connector services. At 5:15, we are scheduled to have a management report. 5:30, we will have public comment period. We will discuss any new old business and work plan updates at 5:40, and the meeting will adjourn at 6 p.m. I do see Ms. Bowersox has joined us. Welcome. Chair Calabia, at this time, I will ask you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you, Anu. You all have received the agenda. Do I hear any objections to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved for today. The next item, of course, is the meeting minutes. We briefly reviewed them at the AAC meeting last Monday. And I noted last Monday that there were a couple of admissions that I was going to fill in. And I have since filled them in and circulated by email to all members. One of the pieces I filled in was how I thanked our presenter regarding the proposed fare gates, how I presented, thanked her for her working with us over three, if not four meetings, coming back and making requirements after each meeting. And we finally reviewed them and mutually agreed upon the last set that we heard last week. The kind of patience and consistency in working with us that she showed us, I characterized as a model consultation in which we work closely together. And I would hope that staff presentations and other presentations would work out in the same way. The other fill-in that I shared with you was regarding Mr. Hibbert of Ride On, who had mentioned the VIA International Consultant Group. And at the time that he mentioned it, I was not sure whether it was the same consultant group that presented a program to us, I guess it was sometime last year. And he mentioned that it might well have been the same group that worked with the DC government and was represented in a meeting previously when the representative presented that joint project to us. So those are the two fill-in pieces that I shared with everyone. And in view of the fact that we briefly went over the draft minutes last week, and I sent you out a revised version with the two fill-in pieces that I've mentioned. Is there anyone who is prepared to move that the agenda be minutes be now adopted?
I so moved.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the minutes of the meeting as I've described them. Hello? All right, let us go now to our next item. Lynn Bowersox is to discuss communications and marketing in terms of customer service. Ms. Bowersox, is she there?
I am here. Yeah. I've just unmuted my phone. I hope all of you can hear me today.
Yes,
we can. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for allowing me to come before you. I have a very short time. I don't want to take up much time on your agenda today, but I wanted to accomplish two things. First, I wanted to let you all know that we're well aware that our website is now, by technology standards, becoming something of a dinosaur. We haven't overhauled it in a long time, and we have a procurement process underway to try to get some technical support and advice for making certain improvements to the website. And we'd very much like to have your input about what is working and not working for folks who come to the website looking for information and need various tools to access it. So that's number one. Number two, I just wanted to hear what the committee's work has been focused on and what, if any, advice, counsel you have for me as somebody who is trying to think hard about ways in which to reach out and be inclusive of people through this budget process that's coming up. You know, for FY22, we are going to be putting out a lot of information about budget things, under consideration, service changes, and so forth. And if there are opportunities to reach out to the communities that you all represent that you think we haven't taken advantage of, I would very much like to understand your ideas and thoughts about that. So with that, I will turn it back over to the chair and just be happy to answer any questions you have and take notes about any suggestions you have for me.
Well, thank you. Since we've been working on Zoom, we've not had major problems with that. I'm one of the more Neanderthal amongst the members, and so I often do not find the right button to press, but that's not true of everyone. I have found a Zoom to be acceptable, and I can foresee our doing this in the future, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. Do any of the members have any suggestions or comments about our communications with each other through Zoom?
Chair Calabria, I do see two hands up already. Dr. Posner, followed by Patrick Sheehan. Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Hi, well, good evening.
Hi, Phil. Hello. Thank you. Nice to hear your voice.
Super. The major thing that I think we need is the budget has been very complicated for everyone, not just the disability community. But I think it would be really important, particularly after this Thursday's finance and executive session meeting, that we get information out to the people that use Metro Access and let them know about any changes that might be in the future. We know, because we've had the chair and the GM and Mr. Reeder all come talk to us and, you know, give us a good explanation, but it's pretty complicated. And I think it's nice for them to know what the 2021 budget is, what the 2022 budget is, with the new pot of money that's coming in, which we'll find out about on Thursday, et cetera. So it'd be really nice to put something bullet together that possibly ADAP can send out to the Metro Access folks and also the disability organizations that work with ADA.
Great. We would love to do that and have you all work with us to relay that information. Thank you.
We have received the press release regarding the budget situation now that the federal stimulus package has been approved, and we have received some monies to cover us for the next 6 months. Just today, I sent out DCist, the online news magazine's observations about what we can expect. We know that there is a meeting Thursday, and I guess subsequent to that, there'll be a report on what's decided by the board in light of these new funds that have been received from the federal government.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so the package that's out on our website today talks about the general manager's proposal to amend the 21 budget. It basically fills the entire gap that was there for 21 and allows the service that's operating today to continue to operate, okay? So rather than to have the layoffs and service cuts that were contemplated for this month and next month, we would stay whole for the remainder of this fiscal year through June 30th. And then the more exciting news is the conversation the board will have on Thursday about the next fiscal year, which begins July 1st for fiscal 22, right?
Yes.
And that was, to your point, Mr. Chairman, the the really big discussion point will be, because we don't have sufficient federal relief to cover the gap for all of the next fiscal year, what are the choices that we have to make there? The general manager has put forth a proposal. His proposal makes many assumptions about what can be afforded and when, and based on, you know, what we know today. Of course, as you know, through this pandemic, that has changed and we've had to revise our budget assumptions many times. And so that is subject to change, but it at least gets a first crack at this on the table and a first docket so that we can go out and get public comment about what matters most to our riders.
At the moment, there won't be a need to lay off staff, if I'm correct?
That's right. So the 1,400 people that had been contemplated to be laid off with the service cuts will not need to be laid off. You know, there's always some puts and takes going on at Metro about administrative back office support and how we do things efficiently. So we never have a no impacts situation. There's always a handful of changes that are going on. We still have the buyouts that we put in place for retirees, for people who are eligible to retire, and the $15,000 incentive to go now, to retire now if you're eligible. So that's still happening, and there'll probably be about 300 people who take advantage of those programs. So there will still be people who depart, but the forced layoffs of people who were associated with those service cuts will now not occur.
Excellent. Based on Thursday's meeting, I guess there will be a proposed service plan starting for July 1st, and there will be hearings regarding that kind of thing?
That's right. So the plan that the general manager has proposed to the board that they'll start talking about Thursday,
yes,
is that the service that we have now would continue through all of calendar 21. And we would start to add back certain bus services in the March and May timeframe. To extend certain routes to later in the evening, for example, to add some frequency to some routes that are more heavily traveled and so forth. So we would start to phase back in some bus service. And then at the end of this fiscal year, we would again face another cliff where we didn't have enough federal relief to continue to operate the service that we offer at that point, and we would have to make another series of choices. Those choices are what's in the docket that will be out for public comment if the board agrees on Thursday. And so that's where we will need your help to say this is more important than that, and this is tolerable and that's not tolerable.
Right. Thank you. Patrick, I think you had a question or a comment.
Thank you, Tina. Now, yes, I wanted to talk about the website for a minute. Have a question. I don't know that I've ever gotten, or maybe I forgot the answer. And the question is that I work as a 508 project manager for Department of Veterans Affairs, so I know what the federal government has to meet as far as technical standards. Does WMATA, is it a sort of a formal understanding that they will meet Section 508 standards? Do they try to adopt the guidelines? I've never heard whether, you know, 508 is strictly enforceable by WMATA. That's the question. The ask is, so that we would be able to help and at least give proper advice, would it be possible to share WMATA's processes on how they develop their websites, including testing, tools that they use, how they, you know, if they're meeting 508 guidelines, how they do it, that sort of thing. And then the other part of that, 508 are technical standards. That doesn't mean you can always use the website, easy to get around, things are in good places. So you've got the whole other issue of usability. How usable is it? Can I get to XYZ, which is different than the 508 standards?
Right.
If you can speak to first whether WMATA absolutely is under a mandate to meet 508, and then talk about the process documents and usability.
So I do not know whether we embrace or comply with 508 standards, but I will inquire and find out and get back to you on that, Patrick, through the chair, if that's okay. The process for developing and redeveloping, I'm not sure it's in writing. I will ask IT whether the web team did that in the last go-round of website development. So there's been two in the 10 years I've been at WMATA. The year I came on board, which was 2010, was the first sort of big change in the look and feel of the site. And then in a subsequent year, I'm sorry, I forget which one, we worked to make the site more functional on mobile devices. So we worked
mobile devices, right?
That's right. So we worked with IT on two iterations, but again, I understand that in 10 years, that's not a lot of change for technology and the pace of change there.
You had a refresh in 508 that happened in 2018, which affected documents specifically and really clarified the standards. Having been kind of maybe where you are, making sure that processes are written down and shared with the new webmasters and all that is very important. So if the processes aren't in place and we're putting a serious look on how the web pages and content is developed, we may want to explore how to make sure processes are developed and shared and written down. There's an awful lot of work out there that's already done as far as testing, what works, what doesn't work, acquisition language, all that kind of stuff that WMATA would not have to recreate. The GSA has a lot of good information that's shareable, and the rest of the federal government does too. So
That's very helpful. And let me just say, Carol's on, and if Carol wants to add to this, she probably has much deeper technical knowledge.
Good. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
I can tell you, Patrick, that we do, we have adopted WCAG 2.1AA and Section 508. I mean, they're we're virtually identical now, but it includes the 508 refresh, and that with the procurement that's underway to do this work, that's specified in the procurement that this is the standard that it must meet.
Oh, you do have it. Okay, that's great.
That's good. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I was not. I've gotten caught on the other side where they adopt it as guidelines, but not a mandate, and that makes a difference. Okay.
Patrick, just to add to that, we are 508 compliant. You are aware that we have been doing everything possible to make this 508 compliant. We had an internal process prior to this new new development, also the new refresh look. So David's been working with IT in trying to get all of this to work together as seamlessly as possible. This is similar to when the ADA was enacted in 1990. All of us architects were trying to be prepared to the new standard, et cetera, but it takes time and processes to educate everyone at the same time. There are thousands of people who have produced thousands of documents on our website. And it's the same thing as saying all doors might be wider just because the ADA was enacted. That's not the way it works. We've been working for since 1990, architects and everyone that builds something has been working to widen those doors, open those. And we all know that there are a lot of areas that are not accessible. So with digital accessibility, we're in basically at the beginning of what we should be doing. And we're all trying in that direction. All our contracts are going to be headed in that direction, et cetera. But we're still a work in process. Mm-hmm. And believe me, we are trying. We're all working together. We have, we're trying to internally educate everyone who prepares documents, et cetera, so that we can make sure that we're getting there. but it's a work in progress and we're really trying.
So I think,
I think there's help. Yeah.
Patrick, to your point, and David is clearly into this and Carol more than I am. So there might be a point after the procurement is completed when they have a project path, you know, that they're going to, and then you could be briefed on the project path so that you could see where the testing process and so forth is.
Good.
You know, the procurement process is probably not the right time to do that. But once a contractor is under, you know, is under.
When they're under contract, yes.
That might be the time for us to review that with you to make sure that, you know.
That's excellent. Yeah. Good. And Carol, we're very much in the same boat. So anything that I say about, you know, digital accessibility, the same fight that we're all trying to achieve the compliance level, usability is another area that's important. So I think that there's a lot of information out there. And I think with the members of the committee that have expertise in those areas, it's to our benefit, to everyone's benefit, to help where we can and do as much as we can, as often as we can, with standards and processes and procedures and all that stuff written down. So, you know, you're following all that stuff. So I'm not being judgmental. I think that there's ways we can help, and I think it would be worthwhile to do that.
Patrick.
Thank you.
You have the most expertise of any member of the advisory committee itself. So I hope we can prevail upon you to be a kind of task force of one that we are kept abreast of this. And Ms. Bowersucks, you mentioned that there might be something in right, but when will we get such things? Can you give us an estimate of when you and Carol and David can package something that can be reviewed by the committee members, something in writing?
May I chime in for a second, Ms. Bowersucks?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, so because I'm working on the procurement, and as you all remember, and yes, Patrick would be a great committee of one, but we're not trying to put all the burden on Patrick, that there's going to be the consultant or consulting team hired in part, and this is just a reminder for the whole committee, part of the task will be to come to the AAC, and we haven't decided yet. We're going to talk with you all to decide, are we going to use a meeting for that, which could probably take up a whole meeting, or are we going to have a separate meeting for those interested? It could be the entire committee or just those specifically interested in this topic, but to talk specifically and directly with the consulting team, that's going to be on the front end. And then once their work is done, they're going to come back and report to you on the back end. And that's sort of the methodology that we're trying to incorporate your specific and direct feedback. And then once they advise all of Metro, including Ms. Bowersucks and her role, that's when a more official policy statement perhaps may be developed. But I just want you all to be aware, very soon, the procurement process, as you all know, we've talked about through other matters, has a specific role, and we're not going to rush their role in that. But as soon as that is done, the consultant or consulting team is going to come before the AAC, either in one of our meetings or a special meeting, so that we can go point by point, page by page, document by document, if you wish, to give advice and show on accessibility as well as usability.
That would be the Accessibility Advisory Committee, not this particular bus rail subcommittee.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
So do you have an estimate then of when something will happen and a package be prepared? I mean, even if it's a year from now, or I always hate to leave these things so open-ended in terms of when things get done. Can you give us at least an estimate?
Let's say the first estimate is that the AAC should be able to speak directly with the consulting team within the next 60 days.
60 days?
Yes, if not sooner, but within at least the next 60 days. Although again, that's all pending the procurement process. And sure, we've been through that as a group and talking on other things. But I'm saying approximately 60 days, the committee should be able to, either during an AAC meeting or if we choose a special meeting, to speak directly with the consulting team.
Okay, that'll be in the
60 days is good, Tina.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah.
We're capturing that in the minute records. Yes, Ms. Bowersox.
For people to think about it, that's going to be a huge opportunity and coming faster than I expected, actually. In addition to looking at standards and compliance and testing protocols, also think about it from the perspective of the customer, right? And so today, for example, the entire website is driven by the fact that the number one functionality for the website must be trip planning. It is the number one feature that customers want from that website. So after trip planning, what are the other important features? We need your advice and input about that. Where are the sections that you go to as customers who are very invested in WMATA, where you're looking for documents that can be translated, various tools? You know, think about it from the functionality perspective, if you would, and give us that advice, because one of the things that we are really challenged by is everybody wants everything on the homepage all the time. And so we have a whole governance structure about the website, right, to try to balance the needs of real estate and employee communications and what the customers need from the trip planner and police emergencies that they want to communicate. And so the web has to work very hard, and it's the most important communication portal that we have. And I grossly oversimplify it, but because I do that because I think every rider who comes to it, or every advocate, comes to it with an information need that they think should be front and center. And I would just ask that everybody remember that the million people a month who come to that website, more than 80% want to use the trip planner, and everything else gets subsumed under that.
Okay. Are there any last comments or questions of
Chair Calabria?
Yes.
Mr. Torres, bear with me. Let's go through all the members first. Steve, wanting to make some comments. I see Kelly. Dr. Posner had not finished his questions. I see Doris and then Ansel Torres. So Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Steve, and hi, Lynn. The question regarding the customer service module on the website. Let's say I'm a customer and I ride a bus, and I have either a question or I have a compliment or I have a concern, and so I place it onto the I place it into customer service. And I'd say very, very quickly, I get a response acknowledging it very quickly. But what is the procedure subsequent to that quick acknowledgement that goes on in WMATA to get the information? That is any particular or specific departments involved? And how does that detail come back to the individual who then comes back to the customer?
Sure. So it depends on the nature of your comment. So if it's a commendation, let's say, it comes into the customer contact center. The WMATA four-letter acronym is CSVC. And so a customer relations representative would pick that up and say, hey, that's a commendation for a bus operator. And so that would go to the bus department, to the right division, to give to a recognition to that operator. It also goes to employee communications, because we try to amplify those commendations and tell the good news stories about our employees who are doing the right thing. So that would be the two streams for that. If it's a concern that's expressed, this bus operator routinely bypasses me at this stop, then that's going to go to a higher level. If it's a safety matter, it goes directly to the safety department, as well as to bus senior management to say you may have a problem here. If the customer relations rep says, hey, I've had 3 complaints this week about this route and this operator, it gets ratcheted up even higher. Typically, if it's a really strong concern, and let's say there's an employee who's had a repeat set of issues, you're not going to get back highly specific information, but what may happen is that management may be counseling, may be actively engaged in discipline with that employee. And so those are private and confidential matters that you don't get a lot of specificity back in. But the every comment is taken seriously and is communicated to operations in order to help improve the service one way or the other.
All right, thank you. Thanks.
Did that answer your question?
Pardon me?
Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. I have a follow-up on that. Mm-hmm. What happens if what follows afterwards back to the customer is not, may have gone through the process and will in WMATA, but the detail that comes back isn't always precise. Suppose the customer then wants additional follow-up or additional understanding as to how precisely their question was looked at and resolved. What's the process to find additional information?
So typically there's either an email or a telephone exchange with a customer relations representative to get additional information flowing with the customer.
So we'd be back to the same process.
Yeah, the customer relations representative, each of those issues that come in is assigned a case number and tracked accordingly so that we can manage it through to the end of the case.
Okay, all right.
It's 4:37, could we move along?
I want one very quick comment. As you're designing the communication procedures for the next hearing, one of the concerns that for buses in specific, one of the concerns is that the reasons why decisions are made are not always communicated. You know, all of a sudden, people who are depending upon service, either for their livelihoods or for shopping, or even to take care of a child and getting that child to gate care, may need to make changes. And, and they'd like to know why a decision was made. Is there any way to have that communicated? I'm actually, as you can see, I'm open to your suggestion as to how, but that why as to particular cuts or changes in service isn't always communicated, but just put into effect. Do you have an idea how that might be best communicated to and followed up if necessary?
Well, I think that one of the things that we can do better is once the board makes a decision about the next fiscal year and the service changes are determined, is when we then need to go back out with the same degree of rigor that we went out with the docket and say, here are the decisions that were taken by the board for the next fiscal year. And here is both what was decided and why. I think that we can do better on that. And I've taken a note to try to focus this year on adding the why to the what. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Chair Calabia, Dr. Posner's question was, he could not complete. Dr. Posner, did you want to go ahead and complete your question at this point?
Yes, I'll be really fast. The jurisdictions have started giving out the vaccine. And I think it's important that WMATA confirm that masks and distancing are still very important. Since one, you can still carry the virus, even if you're personally immune to it. Secondly, in older people, the vaccine is only 86% effective on the original data, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's really important that notices go out emphasizing the fact that even though you have been inoculated, that you still need to wear a mask and maintain social distancing on bus and rail.
So that is an important point. I'm working on the vaccination plan for our employees right now. And I take your point. I will take that back to our medical director and our safety director. I think that a number of us believe that once we're inoculated, we don't have to wear masks anymore. And for the public in general, as well as for Metro riders. That's going to be an enormous educational challenge. So thank you for that reminder, and we'll build that into our plan.
Super, thank you.
The next question.
Kelly?
Yes, hi, this is Kelly Simoneau. I have a question related to the COVID station closures, and I came on about 15 minutes late, so I'm sorry if any of this was addressed, but in light of the budget, is that those station closures going to be adjusted?
So the budget that's going before the board this Thursday, if they amend the FY21 budget as has been recommended by the general manager, there will not be any station closures that are budget related this year. There may be some at other times for platform improvement projects or things like that, but we will not be taking the service cuts that are budget driven that we anticipated.
Is that okay, Kelly?
Will there be, are any of the stations suspected, if the budget goes through, suspected to be closed then? Or that opens up everything?
So not in this fiscal year through June 30th, but there may be some discussion of station closures next year if we don't get adequate funding.
Okay, that's my questions for now. We'll wait to see what happens.
Next questioner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we only have 3 more minutes left. Doris, go ahead.
Yes, my questions or my comment actually regards the website accessibility. I think this needs to be a high priority because number one, not only does the ADA require that digital resources, information resources be accessible, but it was made clear by the Department of Justice in 2010, not so much before that, that a website is a service, and particularly in the case of a Title II and Title III entity, which WMATA is. And then also, right now, since COVID particularly, the hours of the customer service scheduling and planning telephone call-in service have been severely reduced, including not having any service over the weekend and holidays. And that is critical for people, particularly when you're using the bus and if you don't have a smartphone or whatever, you need to be able to use the website if that's going to be the alternative to the call-in service. And lastly, I wanted to mention that at the COG Access for All Committee, they were revamping their website some time ago. It was 8 or 10 years ago. And we had a very open process, the staff there, in terms of participation by potential customers to using that website. It was well beta tested. And I think that should be a strict requirement in the procurement to make sure that it's accessible and usable, because we caught some things early on regarding even the portal not being accessible. One of the people who was involved in that was at the Department of Education, and he was the Section 508 coordinator, well respected. So I trust very much with Patrick being involved in this that this is going to be good. But we've been at this, and WMATA has been at this for too long, and it needs to be fixed. And with regard to what customers are going to use and not use, yes, everything related to customers and patrons using bus and rail service and metro access, but also public services like the website for any of the advisory committees and the WMATA board and all of that need to be accessible. It can't be just a half and half kind of situation that you can't use. It has to be fully accessible and usable, as Patrick said. Thank you for letting me make this comment.
Any other comment? If not,
hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Who's yes, this is Axel Torres.
Yes, quickly, we're running out of time.
I understand. Yes, my name is Ansel Torres. I am not a member of the AAC. I am a user of the WMATA service. I appreciate you coming before us to speak about the budget, because for me personally, the budget fiasco that we had last year with a 300-page PDF document not being accessible to blind users was, I think, totally unacceptable. ADA has been around since, for 31 years now. 508 has been around for 23 years now. And WMATA is still sort of learning the gospel on 508, even though there's a Department of Access Services and there's supposedly an ADAP that is supposed to be focusing on ADA policy and a 508 coordinator who should know better. It is very difficult, almost impossible, to easily find information on disability issues on WMATA. I was just using the website a few minutes ago, and you cannot find Metro Access on the homepage. You can find bus and rail on the homepage, but you cannot find Metro Access. That is inequality of the worst kind. And I'm sure if this was to be taken before a court of law, WMATA would be severely penalized for this type of discrimination. Also, bus and rail riders have had an app to know when their next bus is arriving or their next train is arriving. Metro Access passengers were not accommodated when that app was being developed. Why is it that we are constantly treated as second-class citizens at WMATA? That has to stop. It has to stop because it is wrong. It is immoral and it is actually illegal because you're not following Title II and Title III. There seems to be some effort to do catch up by coming up with this procurement, and that is good that it is happening. But many times WMATA pays lip service to things, and I'm glad that the chairman this evening was asking for specific timelines, because a lot of times these things come up, there's a lot of happy talk around it, and then it disappears and nobody knows what's going on with it. We're being told that there's a Metro Access tracking app that is supposed to be procured in the next 2 years. Why on earth do we have to wait two more years for an app? That app should have come out at the same time as the bus rail app, okay? And that clearly demonstrates second-class status, and that must stop. Another thing that I was hearing is that if I need to get the PDF in accessible format, I have to make a request ahead of time. I don't believe so. The budget should be in an accessible format from day one. I understand if you need to make a request in Braille, that's a separate issue. But I should not have to ask for the document to be in accessible PDF format. The budget was a 300-page document last year. Most of us, if not all of us who attend these meetings, and even folks on the AAC, they're not finance majors, they're not financial analysts, and they're not accountants. I believe a Cliff Notes version of the budget should be developed alongside with the budget so that common folk who do not have any kind of understanding of of high finance, we should be able to read the document. Thank you very much, and I await your answer.
Mr. Torres, a consultant team may be coming as soon as 60 days from now, or maybe shortly thereafter, and some of these questions can be brought up with them and answers provided, hopefully at that time. In the meanwhile, Lynn, did you have a comment before we close this agenda item?
I do want to thank you for the suggestion of the Cliff Notes version of the budget. I think that most of us have a difficult time with the budget. I would count myself in that group. A $4 billion budget is difficult to consolidate. However, I think you're right that all of our riders need that, all of our stakeholders need that, and I am going to look into that further. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any last comments? If not, we are moving to our 4:45 agenda. Mr. William Jones is representing the Arlington Transit Company regarding the bus operations there. Mr. Jones, are you with us?
Good afternoon. My name is William Jones.
Yes.
I'm here with you all.
Welcome, yes. Mr. Jones. We can hear you well. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for the opportunity to speak with you guys about Arlington Transit. I'll be brief so that questions, if there are any, could be shared. Also here, I have a few of my colleagues that have joined on here as well. So they'll be taking notes and helping and answering questions, or at least feeding me the answers if necessary. So Arlington Transit, as some of you may know, and others may be learning for the first time, is a bus service in Arlington County that supports Metrobus, Metrorail, and VRE. We have a total of 16 bus routes that run throughout the county, serving all Metrorail stations with the exception of Arlington Cemetery and National Airport. And we are a 7-day-a-week operation, with most of the routes running during the weekdays, and some services running on Saturday and Sundays. In terms of where we have been concerning the pandemic, of course, when the pandemic began, stay-at-home restrictions were put in place throughout the region. And so just as Metrobus went to a different set of service levels, we did as well. Just operating our core bus services that serve major corridors such as the Columbia Pike Corridor, bus services along the Roslyn-Ballston Corridor, which is Clarendon and Wilson Boulevards between Roslyn and Ballston, services out of Shirlington Transit Center, which is near 395, connecting from the south side of the county to the north side of the county. We worked on a plan in terms of how we would monitor and keep service running, particularly on the fixed route side with ART, but with our paratransit service that I'll get into in just a moment with STAR, we continue to provide service as needed when the trips were being booked and made available based upon what places were open during the first couple of months of the stay-at-home restrictions, as many of the places that the STAR users would go to were not available in terms of county offices and county resources, or were closed due to stay-at-home restrictions for those who use the paratransit service to get from home to their place of employment. During the summer, we began to work on returning the Arlington Transit bus service back to normal by restoring some of the services. And from that perspective, we were able to bring most of the bus service back as of August 23rd, 2020. We have 12 of the 16 bus routes in operation, with the remaining bus routes that are not in operation, weekday rush hour only services that we hope to bring back sometime this calendar year, depending on how the trends take shape in terms of individuals returning back back to work.
Mr. Jones, we appreciate that your overall accounting of what's happened in terms of service given the pandemic and the stay-at-home policies. But as members of the community of people with disabilities and seniors, we wonder if you could tell us more specifically about how the buses accommodate people with disabilities or seniors. For example, we heard last week from a representative of Montgomery County's Ride On, and he described the quantum self-securement mechanism, which enables some users of wheelchairs to be able to secure themselves without additional help from the bus operator. He mentions that Ride On was the first transit company, or at least suburban transit company, to offer masks in dispensers on the buses. Could you tell us about these kinds of things that are designed to make your fleet accessible to people with disabilities, and in particular, how the people with disabilities and seniors are being accommodated during this time of pandemic?
Sure. In terms of the latter question, first, I would say from the STAR perspective, the way that the STAR service works, all of the vehicles are accessible. However, we do have, since the county does not own the paratransit vehicles, we only own the fixed route vehicles. The service providers for the paratransit service have been making sure that all passengers who are making trips through STAR are properly accommodated. Because we don't own the vehicles, we don't have a program similar to what you mentioned with Montgomery County. So that's something that we have to look into for the future. But all of our buses are ADA compliant with automatic voice announcement and visual stop notifications. In terms of being able to accommodate those with disabilities, with the fleet being ADA accessible, we're able to accommodate two wheelchair passengers on board our fixed route buses, and then on the paratransit vehicles, depending on the vehicle type, whether it's a van or it's a small duty bus, able to accommodate two wheelchair passengers at a time. In terms of, as you mentioned, with the pandemic, we have been providing a mask to passengers who are in need of masks on board our fixed route buses, as well as the paratransit providers have been providing masks for those who need a mask while boarding those vehicles. In terms of the fixed route side, the one other thing I want to mention is that on the ART side, we have provided hand sanitizing dispensers on board the buses, so that those want to use hand sanitizer, they're able to use hand sanitizer. And we continue to have masks available if needed, if passengers need a mask on board when they board the bus. We continue to work to see what else we can do in terms of accommodating those who are in the accessibility community, as well as seniors, and we'll continue to work through that. One thing that we did that took place over the summer that was a slight change was that from the county's perspective, the county provided call center software for the STAR call center office. And so that was one slight change during the middle of the pandemic that we did our best to communicate out, because it changed the number to the STAR call center office for booking of trips. So from that perspective, that was one change that was made, but it was not an impact to the physical riding of the service. We are continuing to work and determine if there are any improvements that need to be made to the call center software, primarily because it was a different program than the previous one that we had, which was unfortunately outdated. So I hope that helps answer your question. I'm not exactly sure if there was something in particular that you were interested in.
Yes, apart from the paratransit services, as you well know, the Umato Metro buses and some of the suburban transit operations have been making rear door availability for boarding the buses. And in some cases, that meant that the fare would be free. What is the situation with your transit company? Is it rear boarding still, or what?
Unfortunately, we went back to collecting fares on Sunday, January the 3rd, similar to Metrobus services. So that's where we are at this time in terms of, so the rear door boarding ended on Saturday, January 2nd.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee about this transit service?
Chair Calabria, Anthony has a question. Anthony, go ahead.
Hello, sir. This is Anthony Oberg. Thank you for coming to talk to us. Just a quick question on the buses for you. I live in Arlington. I use a wheelchair, and I know I haven't really ridden buses since the pandemic started. But I am curious if I know before the pandemic, tie downs and being tied down by the driver if you used a wheelchair was required. And I was wondering, I couldn't see anything on the website. I was wondering how you've addressed that during COVID. Have you relaxed, you know, if a person with a wheelchair like myself comes on and says, you know, you have to get pretty close to me to tie me down. Is that accommodation made if the person is nervous to get that close to the driver?
Yes, it is made on a case by case basis based upon request. While you bring up a good point that, you know, for your safety, we want to make sure that you are in with the way the Q-Strength system is set up. If you if you're able to lock your wheelchair in place and make sure it's secure, we'll certainly be able to accommodate that, because that's definitely a change now.
Yes.
Since the pandemic, having individuals close to one another. And I'll make sure to follow up on that with our bus operations division, just to make sure, so that as individuals do ride, that we know to kind of be mindful and make sure the operators have flexibility in that. I haven't heard any issues so far on that, but definitely we'll look into it and through the proper channel pass a response back to you guys.
And the only reason I bring it up is because I know pre-pandemic, you know, drivers were pretty adamant about wanting to make sure I was safe. And, you know, even if I could put the brakes on, you know, pre-pandemic, it was very strict, like you must be tied down. And so I get that. But with the pandemic, I think that's a little bit different. So I appreciate your answer.
Mr. Jones, the representative from the Montgomery County Ride-On Bus showed us pictures and I think a video of the quantum self-securement mechanism, which enables people with wheelchairs to secure themselves without necessarily having to have the bus operator come back and do that for them. Do you have any such self-securement mechanisms in your buses?
I'm not exactly sure if our buses have the self-securing equipment in there. We do have Q-Strength, but not that model. So I'll have to double check and talk with Bus Operations Division and our folks that work on procurement of the buses to see what specifically we have and what opportunities we can to look at in the future. But we do not have the self-securing Q-Strength system on board our vehicles.
With respect to having a person using a wheelchair be assisted by the bus operator, I'm sure that the bus operator wears a mask. And as you may know, the Metro buses here are being are having protective enclosures installed to help bus drivers protect themselves. What kind of protection, besides making them wear masks or ensuring or helping them to wear masks, what do bus drivers have to protect themselves? You probably know that nationally, many bus drivers have fallen victim and even died from COVID. How are you protecting your bus drivers?
So back on the 19th of December, our entire fleet was installed with operator barriers. The operator barrier doors cover and give protection to the operator. They're a little bit taller and a little bit wider than some of those that have been out there. I know on most of the Metrobus fleet, there are operator door shields or operator barriers that are installed, such as the case now on ART. So all of the county-owned ART buses have operator barriers or operator shield doors installed. So that's what we did in terms of being able to protect the bus operators, especially in light of the fact of returning to a fair paying process with the front door being open. That was put in advance of the change being made to reinstalling collecting fares and having passengers enter through the front door.
Before I get to other members of the committee, now that you've taken measures to protect the bus operators, what about the passengers that they're transporting in the bus itself? Are there special measures that are being taken to help safeguard them from the COVID virus, the aerosolized virus?
In terms of those precautions, the Bus Operations Division maintenance team does a deep cleaning of the buses after each run, meaning when the bus goes back to the garage, that is done. There's also a ventilation. They also clean the ventilation system and do a deep clean of the buses every night.
Has there been any consideration of switching over to germicidal ventilation systems, that is a ventilator that uses the ultraviolet C lights to kill the aerosolized virus, be they corona or flu or other kinds of virus? Has there been thought about using such germicidal ventilators?
That's something that we continue to look in and research with other transit agencies across the country with respect to that particular item. Also, I would mention that we're still in the process and we strictly enforce social distancing on the buses. So that's the one thing, the major thing that we've done. It's a little bit easier to manage. I won't say that it's that we manage it perfectly, but we only carry no more than 12 people at a time. And on routes along the Columbia Pike Corridor, if there's overcrowding, which we do experience during the mornings, there's about one to two additional buses that are put on two bus routes in the weekday mornings and in the late weekday evenings to address capacity needs, to address the demand, if you will, while maintaining social distance guidelines. So unlike some agencies where they're allowing people to sit where they want to sit and for the bus to increase in terms of capacity, we stick to a max of 12.
Okay.
So that's the other thing that we're doing.
Any questions or comments from members of the committee?
Chair Calabia, I do have a few members who would like to ask questions. Doris is next. Doris, go ahead.
Doris? While we're waiting for Doris, who is next?
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure whether I was muted or not and got confused. My name is Doris Ray, and I do work in Arlington and use ArtBus. I'm also a member of the Disability Advisory Commission. So I was wondering if you could clarify whether 100% are 100% of the art buses low floor accessible buses.
Hello and Happy New Year, Ms. Doris.
Hello.
The answer to that question is yes. 100% of the ART buses, which the county owns, are accessible.
And you aren't using any more of the shuttle kinds of buses that aren't accessible?
That's correct. The R-Bucks have been gone since December of 2019, if you recall. Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure that was my understanding. So I'm wondering about the scheduling here and routing of the ART buses in the pandemic. As you mentioned, you're maintaining service on 12 of the 14 routes, and a lot of the services in the Orange Line Corridor and Columbia Pike and some other places that are high demand. But I'm just curious about, since ART was supposed to be supplemental in the first place to bus service from Metrobus, because we do have a lot of Metrobus service in Arlington, thankfully. I'm curious why perhaps you wouldn't have given some emphasis to corridors in the routes that might serve the residential portions of Arlington in this time, so that people who are living in residential neighborhoods can get to where they need to go in what I'll call downtown, midtown Arlington. And the other question that I have is, right now, I know, for example, Virginia Hospital Center is a testing site, and there are other testing sites, and also vaccinations have started, and I believe there's a particular health clinic, or it might be more than one, that are providing for vaccinations. So I'm curious about whether those sites are fully accessible by ART bus and or at least a Metrobus.
Yeah, Mr. Jones?
Sure. All right. So of the services that are not currently running, there are services that would only run during the weekday rush hour period to take those who are bound for rail stations to go to places of employment. So the services that are running currently do in fact serve Virginia Hospital Center. They do serve any of the potential county locations where testing sites would be set up. Particularly, there's one in the Arlington Mill neighborhood along Columbia Pike. That is served. And I know right now that the county's health department is looking at the Walter Reed Community Center, which is on along bus route 77 in the 10B. That would be a place where services are running on or at close to their weekday levels. So we'll make sure to provide access to those locations, and we're in close communication with the health department. Should there be a need to provide services to a testing location that's not on an existing bus route, whether it be ART or Metrobus. But Virginia Hospital Center has the 51 and the 52 running out of Ballston for those who need to get to Virginia Hospital Center for vaccinations.
And the only last thing I would say in follow up to your answer is that I think you need to be cognizant of whether the bus stops are inaccessible places to get to the buildings that have the vaccine or the testing. For example, Walter Reed Community Center, if you're coming from the Orange Line corridor on that bus and get off right there at the closest stop, it's there's not a traffic light or a pedestrian crossing there that's at all safe. and I've been over there many times.
Your response, so, Mr. Jones?
Say that with confidence.
I will pass that along to our traffic engineering and operations group as they're responsible for traffic in Missoula County.
Glebe Road otherwise. Yeah.
Doris, we have other questions.
That was it.
Okay. Doris. The last person to ask question, and I know we are running over time, Mr. Jones, so thank you for staying with us. Kelly, go ahead.
Yes, I just have a quick question related to the securement. Does ART have a mandatory securement policy?
Yes, we do.
And can you articulate what that policy is?
So the policy basically is that we want all those who are in wheelchairs to be properly secured on board the bus, whether it's an county-issued ART bus or if it's our private service providers for paratransit. I will need to revisit that in a little bit more detail because in terms of a written county policy, we're using the transit agencies or transit industry's best practices when it comes to that, with exception for discretion as shared earlier in response to a question that was posed regarding self-securement or avoiding securing passengers that are not comfortable due to where we are with the pandemic.
Is someone denied a ride if they're unwilling to be secured?
No, we're not denying anyone a ride. And if there is some sort of complication, then what we try to do is to work, if we need to work with that individual and see if they can actually use the STAR service if there is some level of uneasiness, if you will.
Okay, we'd have now a guest from another transit company. Any last questions or comments of Mr. Jones? If not, let's move to
Tina.
Mr. Zarbo.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Jones. We really appreciate you staying the extra time with us.
Anu, no, excuse me.
Yes.
I think Rico may have a question. Rico, did you have a question? This is Anthony.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, okay. Mr. Jones.
Are you ready, Anu?
Just a moment.
Okay, just let me know when.
Yes, thank you for being very patient and staying with us.
Oh, no big deal.
Okay, are we good?
Yeah, we're good. I'm ready to go. Okay, well, thank you all. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate time speaking to the group. I'm actually going to share my screen, so.
Yes, we thank you for the pictures that you're about to show us.
World of, let me pull this up. Here we go. We're going to do this. Share. Okay. From the beginning. There we go. So is everyone able to see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. So I wanted to give you first a little brief introduction about myself. I wanted to go ahead and tell you a little bit about my career, just so you know where I come from, and to explain that, you know, I'm more than just a chief of operations for Fairfax Connector. I actually started part of my career. I started at Red Top Cab years and years ago. So some people are familiar with Red Top Cab in this area. And we serviced Arlington and Arlington and Fairfax County. And through Red Top Cab, we obviously offered metro access service. So, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago, I'm very, very, very familiar with metro access service. So at one point in my career, I actually taught the metro access training to the drivers for the cab company. So I have a great background in working with senior citizens and individuals with disabilities. From the cab company, I moved on to FastTran, and we'll go on a little bit more. And FastTran is the complementary paratransit service within Fairfax Connector, within Fairfax County. And then from FastTran, I've moved on to Fairfax Connector, which is our fixed route bus system. Hit enter. Next slide. There we go. A little bit delay on that, but hope everything going okay on Anu?
Yes, everything is fine.
Okay, great.
Can I just suggest there are blind people in the audience, and so can you describe your pictures as you go along, please? Thanks.
Mr. Zarbo, were you able to hear that?
Looks like his screen is frozen. Hold on for a second.
Okay. There's, I think, some connection issue here.
Maybe we can have him log out and log. Well, there he is. Okay, looks good now. Go ahead.
Okay, are we good?
I think you're back. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, was I chopping up a little bit?
Yes, I think your screen froze for a quick moment, but seems like it's working fine now. So go ahead, please.
Okay, just let me know. It cut me off. I talk fast, so I'll try to talk slow. So the first picture.
I think we lost you again.
Wheelchair accessible vehicle. And then the other picture I have on this slide is a fixed route connector bus, and it's a transit bus that probably is a 40 passenger bus. And so the next slide I wanted to talk about was Fairfax County is a little different. And so we actually, FastTran, which is our complementary paratransit service, actually runs out of a different department. FastTran runs out of Neighborhood and Community Services, which is what we call NCS. And I'm seeing a slow connection. Am I good, Anu?
You're good at this time, yes.
Okay, great. So let me keep going. And so NCS operates FastTran. They also operate taxi voucher program. They also have a mobility
The connection is getting bad again.
So can I suggest, Mr. Zarbo, perhaps you want to log off and log back in and let's see what happens?
Mr. Zarbo? Mr. Zarbo, this is...
County is our Fairfax County Department of Transportation, and so both of us, again, it's a little tricky there.
Okay, yeah, looks like we lost him.
I think we lost him.
So, yeah, maybe he can log off and log back in.
Well, yeah.
Anu, were you the one sharing the screen, or was it him?
He was the one sharing the screen.
Okay, can he send you the slides and you share the screen, and then perhaps he can take himself out of video, because sometimes that also, it could be in his connection. So sometimes if he's not in video and just audio, and it might help.
So we're working on that, Mr. Cho. Can we go to David and have the
Mr. Blake, Mr. Zarbo is back. Mr. Zarbo, you're muted. Would it help if I share my screen?
I went ahead and switched Wi-Fis to a different Wi-Fi, so that might help.
Okay, because as an alternate, if you'd like, I can share my screen if the connection issues persist, and if you'd like, you can perhaps turn off the video, because sometimes our experience is that helps us. But if you want to continue trying this, we can.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, sure. Let's try that. And I switched Wi-Fi too.
Okay, so did you want to continue with showing the presentation, or would you like me to take over?
You can take over if you'd like.
Okay, I will take a quick moment.
Sorry about the difficulties.
No worries.
It's the world we live in right now.
I would have to turn off my video for while I'm trying to put the presentation up. Chair Calabia, did you want to go ahead and take on the next topic?
Anu, I already have the presentation up. If you let me share screen, I can show it.
Oh, absolutely. Sure, go ahead. Dr. Posner?
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay.
Is it up?
No.
Not yet.
Oh, I've got it. I've got to hit share.
Yeah.
Okay, can you see it now?
No.
There we go.
Yes.
Great.
Okay, you should have the pictures of the two buses on there, and you can start it with the NCS Astran if you want. That's what you were talking about.
Sure. Sure. So again, Fairfax County is a little different. Fairfax County has Neighborhood and Community Service, which is a department called NCS, and they actually operate our complimentary paratransit service. They also do taxi voucher program, they do mobility management, and they do travel training. And then, of course, then on where I work now, Fairfax County Department of Transportation, we operate the Fairfax Connector, the fixed route public transit bus service with 91 routes. So we can go to the next slide. Fantastic, thank you. So for our travel training program, we do a one-on-one small group and train the trainer opportunities to reach Fairfax County residents about public transportation. So we do have travel training within Fairfax County. Within Neighborhood and Community Services. And we do all kinds of services with that. We plan a trip by bus or rail. We read bus and rail schedules. We pay bus and rail fare. We complete a bus and rail transfer. So we actually take trips on the buses. And then last but not least, we go through and we help people access local transportation resources. So for Neighborhood and Community Services, we do an extensive amount of travel training for Fairfax Connector, Fairfax County residents. Next slide, please.
Mr. Zarbo, just one second before we move from that. The picture shows a woman, and I think she's holding a cane.
Yes.
What is she doing with that lever?
That's a great point. So every one of our buses has a bike rack on the front of them. And so what the operator is doing is he's teaching her how the bike rack works. So every one of our buses has bike racks and they can handle up to two bike racks.
Okay, I thought it was something specific to a person with this.
No, that's a good question though.
Okay, next slide.
Yep. So I was also asked, some of our ongoing accessibility efforts. So just so everyone knows, Fairfax Connector does participate in the smart and reduced fare programs within WMATA, within the Smart Trip program. We have 334 334 transit buses, and all of our Fairfax Connector buses have ramps and kneel for passengers with mobility needs. And then our bus operators, they are trained on ADA considerations for bus operations. They are trained on hands-on training on ramps and securements, and they are also trained on sensitivity, professionalism, and customer service. So the picture in this slide is showing a bus operator working with a person with a scooter so that they can exit bus number 9759.
Yeah, and that's actually Mike Brownell, who's a former member of our committee.
Oh, great. I guess I picked the right picture when I was making my presentation.
Yes.
That's wonderful. So next slide, please. And then from there, I was asked about some recent accessibility efforts. And I think Mr. Jones spoke on this. Recently, we launched a intelligent transportation system, which is an ITS system within all of our connector buses. So on board, when you're on one of our buses, we have an audio system that announces any upcoming stops, and it also announces any service alerts. So for example, if you're riding bus 151 and there's gonna be a detour tomorrow, we will make announcements throughout the day over the audio system, announcing to the passengers, any changes to the service. Just so you know, we have approximately 2,000 bus stops, just a little bit over 2,000 bus stops within Fairfax County. And our system does enunciate all 2,000 stops as you're coming to those stops. Also within the bus, we have an onboard LED system that displays the location and service alerts. So along with so if you're sitting in one of our connector buses and you're coming to a stop, you're going to hear the stop announced audio, and then you're also going to see the stop displayed on an LED sign. We also have real-time information via smartphone, via text message. So you can sign up for text alerts. So even if you don't have a smartphone, if you have the old-fashioned flip phone, you can still sign up for text alerts to get alerts as to when your buses are going to arrive. And then we also have an automated phone system within our call center for an IVR system, where you can call in and either punch in numbers or enunciate numbers, and it'll give you real-time bus tracking information. Any questions? Next slide. And then she asked me to talk a little bit about future of what we're working on. And just so you're aware, you might know, you might not know, but we currently are operating a vehicle called Relay and it's an autonomous vehicle, autonomous electric shuttle that operates between Dunloring and the Mosaic District. We are exploring effectiveness, public adoption, safety, and how small-scale autonomous vehicles can be used as a first and last mile connection. So we have an autonomous vehicle that operates Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., that operates between Dunloring and the Mosaic. And it's completely electric, completely automated. We do have an operator on board in case there's any safety issues that might come up, but it does run completely by itself to and from the Mosaic and Dunloring. And the vehicle is ADA compliant with an automated ramp and it's equipped with securements. So, and the operator of the relay has had the exact same training that our operators have had related to customer service, ADA compliance, wheelchair securement. I know that Doris is on the call, and right before COVID, we were trying to get a meeting with her out there to take a look at the vehicle. Obviously, with social distancing, we've come across some delays, but you know, the vehicle is always out there if anybody from the committee wants to go out and take a look at it. So next slide is any questions. And again, sorry for the
time. Mr. Zarbo.
Traffic in that area between the Dunmore and Metro and the Mosaic area, I drive my car and I'm scared to death. How do they do that with autonomy?
How do they do what now, sir?
Well, how they travel between Dunloring and the Mosaic District, the traffic there is usually terrible. I know I'm scared to death when I drive my car around there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I would say that it took us about a month and a half to map about a mile, just a little bit over a mile, 1.2 miles to map that out. So it took us about a month and a half to measure out and map it so that the vehicle could drive on its own. The vehicle actually has
parking garages that there's a lot of cross traffic and cars coming out of nowhere. I mean, it's pretty busy. It may just be in the afternoon as it is in the evening.
Have there been any accidents so far?
No, hope so. Hope none will happen. So it's you know, the one thing is that it's extremely adaptive to the environment. It's you know, obviously it has emergency stopping capability. It will stop on a dime if needed. But yeah, it's been so far, it's been a pretty successful operation.
How many wheelchairs can be accommodated at one time?
At one time, it can be one. And we have had some ADA passengers on the vehicle, and they were extremely pleased with the vehicle. It has the same Q-strain system that you would have in, you know, one of our buses. So it's pretty similar to, you know, if you're in a Metro Access vehicle, or if you're in a connector bus, or if you're in an ART bus, it's almost the same system. So it's pretty easy for folks to get used to.
Does a wheelchair user need assistance to become secured in the AV?
Yes, they would need help to get secured.
Any questions?
I would also say to the question, and I'm sorry, my Zoom is a little bit off, so I can't see who's asking, but I can ask and answer any question that's thrown at me. The other interesting thing about the vehicle is it has TSP technology, transit system priority. Traffic signal priority system in it. So, you know, as you're pulling up to the red light, it will actually make the red light last a little bit longer as you're going through it with green, similar to how you would have it in like an ambulance or a fire truck. So, you know, as you're going through, it obviously is not as fast as a normal car. So it will come up to a red light. It will alert the red light that it's coming up to it. It will hold the green a little bit longer than a normal car, so it can get through the intersection, and then it'll continue on with its route.
When did the service begin, and do you keep track of how many rides there have been in the period in which it's been operating?
Yes, we started right, I want to say it was right around October 10th or 11th. We do track ridership.
And in that time, about how many rides per day does it offer?
Oh, you're looking at five to six rides a day, you know, which isn't too bad considering it's COVID on average. But, you know, we hope, you know, we're praying just like everyone else that, you know, a vaccine's around the corner and that we can get back to some normalcy. You know, we can definitely have some more riders as the weather breaks in the spring and summer.
Okay, the next slide.
Next slide is...
Can I say something, please?
Yes.
Given that this is an ADA presentation being given to people who are blind, you're using quite a number of visual slides, and we the blind folks in the audience have no clue what your pictures are there. So please, can you describe them?
Yes, sir.
Picture vehicle.
And if the chair can ensure that the presenters remember that, it's not just sighted folks in the audience. Thanks.
Sure, I apologize for that. So yeah, the picture is a picture of the blue autonomous shuttle bus, which is a small little bus, I guess is the best way I could put it, that has four wheels, and on the side of the bus, it says relay.
And it can accommodate how many passengers?
Right now, because of social distancing, we are only allowing four passengers at a time.
Okay.
This is Mary Kay. If it's an unmanned vehicle, how would a person in a wheelchair get the ramp to activate?
That's a great point. So it's a it does have a safety operator in it at all times, and there is a button inside the vehicle, and there's a button outside the vehicle to deploy the ramp. So it's an automated, it's not like a low floor, and it's an automated system where you push it and then the ramp comes out on the side. So there is somebody actually in the vehicle that can assist and help. For the most part, once the vehicle, once the doors are closed, the vehicle drives on its own.
Does it have a standard route and schedule during the hours that it operates, or is it on-call sort of service?
It's on a schedule. It does about a 30-minute trip each way. There's actually an app I can share with Anu, and she can share with the rest of the group. There's a very basic app that shows you, you know, where the vehicle is, and allows you to see when it's coming. So we do have an app for it too.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. So Mr. Zarbo, I will just go through the order of everybody's hands up. Doris, do you have a question?
I'm sorry, the muting thing. Anyway, thank you for coming to make this presentation, first of all.
All right.
And I am a Fairfax County resident and serve on the Mobility and Transportation Committee of the Long-Term Care Council, which serves as a committee similar to this one in Fairfax County. I am kind of concerned that we put this bus on the road without having the pilot rides that were requested by the MNT committee and actually not by me, by a member of the public. So that's problematic for me, and I can't necessarily endorse this driverless vehicle, and I feel I have to say that, you know, as a citizen. But nonetheless, I wanted to clarify for the members of the AAC that Fast Trans, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, John, but... Fast Trans is not a complementary ADA lookalike paratransit. It's really a human service paratransit service, and it is restricted in terms of trip purpose and trip location and days and times of service. So to really say it's like Metro Access, yeah, or imply that it's not the case, and most Fairfax County residents who are using ADA paratransit are using Metro Access. And John, would you say that's correct?
Yeah, that's a better way to put it, and I apologize for that, but you're right.
I just want to make sure that people in D.C. and Maryland don't get the wrong impression.
No, okay. You're right. Thank you, Darius.
But the bus service, I will say, the call-in service for bus scheduling and planning trips is really good and has continued to operate at good timing for using the service. Can you explain what reductions in route coverage and frequency are in place right now for Fairfax Connector? So that's my major question for you, but I also want to explain that Fairfax Connector does, for all intents and purposes, not operate in the city of Fairfax. It's a Q-bus service, and Q-bus has big problems in terms of accessibility of service and stuff from what I have observed riding the bus compared to Fairfax Connector. So my big question is what reductions in services because of the pandemic, and also were you or the people who preceded you in your position involved in the design and construction of the bus bays on the south side of Vienna Metro Station, which is where the connector service, where you pick up a connector service bus there, because the bus stops themselves, as well as the whole design, white on white on white out there, is really inaccessible and has no contrast for people who are vision impaired or have low vision. And though we brought this up many times out in the county, nothing has been done about it. So I just want to ask you about those two things, the pandemic scheduling as well as the design.
Let him respond.
And construction of the bus bays at Vienna.
No, that's a good question. So reduction of service, we are operating full service right now. We are not reducing, we haven't reduced, we did for a time period, but we are now at full service. We're running all of our routes as normal, on schedule, other than if it's a holiday or something like that. And then the bus bays at Vienna South, I'll make a note of that. That's a combination of us and WMATA. We work together on that. But I can get in touch with our maintenance team and WMATA's maintenance team.
Especially with the high-intensity lighting, by the way.
Right. So I can take that concern to them and see if I can get that corrected.
Next question. Anu, is there any?
Yes, I had to unmute myself. So I just want to remind everyone, we only have 10 minutes remaining. We have Steve, followed by Kelly. And Barbara has been waiting patiently. So Steve, go ahead and make your comment.
Okay, very quick. An extremely impressive presentation, John. Not only the information, but also the exciting things that are being done. So thank you very much. One very quick question. Because you seem kind of advanced in what you're doing, how have you dealt with some of the challenges in social distancing which are occurring just because people are now front boarding. There's a distancing issue between riders. How have you dealt with that?
That's a great point. So there's a couple ways we've dealt with that. First thing is, great question. First thing is that our operators, they all have driver shields. So every one of our buses, all 300 and some buses, all have a driver shield between the operator and the passengers. So that's one. We do offer face coverings for anybody who gets on the bus. Couple other things we do is our planning department has runs a report weekly that, and we've been doing this since March, that gives us a average ridership per route, so that we know where we're, where, you know, our number's more around 10, where I think Anthony said his was, William said his was more around 12. Our number's right around 10 passenger capacity for social distancing. So what we've done is we've been analyzing our routes for the, since March. And so we've added some buses on certain particular routes to assure that, that, you know, we don't reach capacity levels that are gonna, restrict that social distancing. So we have the operator guards, we have the analysis that we're doing that we put extra buses on routes. The other thing is within our buses, we have APCs, which are passenger counters. So in our bus operations control center, I'm going to throw out all kinds of acronyms tonight. In our bus operations control center, we have an alert set up for 10 passengers or more. So if we run into situations where we are experiencing, social distancing limits, we'll actually get alerts in the BOCC. And then we will strategically, we have buses throughout the county that we can then proceed to shift in and pick up passengers along that route so that we don't, go over that social distancing capacity. So driver shields, alerts in our system, and also we've already put on extra buses based on analytics.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, John.
You're
welcome. Kelly,
you're next. Hi, John. This is Kelly Simoneau, and I do hope that at some point we can schedule a time to go out and check out the relay. I am very interested in autonomous vehicles and how that interconnects with the disability community. I'm curious at this point, have y'all had any individuals with disabilities, both mobility or cognitive or any type of disability, been able to try out the relay, to your knowledge?
Yes, we have had passengers ride the vehicle, persons with disabilities. I'd have to look back and find the exact dates and times, but yes, we have deployed the ramp. We've had folks that, needed the wheelchair ramp. We've had folks that were blind, but yes, we've had folks that have ridden the vehicle, and we've received a lot of great comments about the vehicle.
Okay, thank you. Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah, John, I was wondering if I could get your phone number, because I think the comments are going to be going over, and out of respect to the interpreter and Rico, could we take this offline?
Absolutely. I have on my PowerPoint, if you don't mind sharing it with the group, I think you were going to do that.
This is what I will do, Barbara. I will email you Mr. Zarbo's email address so that you can communicate with him. I understand we are running out of time, so thank you for being mindful for that.
You're welcome.
This way you will be able to communicate with him.
John, I will call you tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
This is Tino. I'd like to get his email address too.
I will forward, I'll share that with the with anyone who would like to communicate with him.
Sure.
So you can come in with the correspondent.
Mr. Zarbo, the Accessibility Advisory Committee back at the end of 2019 completed a report. We call it a handbook on railcar design. And we're going to launch a handbook on bus design. So we hope to keep in touch with you on the best practices, best features that you can think of, which would best accommodate people on buses. So I'll be in touch with you about that. More than that, you've mentioned that there are these partition protectors for the bus operators. And it's well known that it's been documented that across the country, dozens and dozens of bus operators have been infected by the COVID and also died. And so many companies have done what you've done, which is to put up these special partitions to protect bus operators from the COVID virus, the aerosolized virus. But even with the social distancing in buses, there still remains a possibility of aerosolized viruses floating in the air, unfortunately. Has there been any thought at your company of using what some bus companies have begun to use, that is germicidal filtration systems utilizing ultraviolet C rays? Have you all considered that yet?
Yes, we've explored a couple options. We're definitely looking at that. I should have touched base on it earlier. We are sanitizing the buses on a nightly basis. We're doing a deep clean. And yes, we are looking at other options for our air circulation system.
Very good. Are there any other questions now of the committee?
Are we going to have a public comment?
All right.
Mr. Torres, it's 5:57 and we only have 2 minutes. So let's conclude the section we are in at the moment. Mr. Zarbo?
The stuff was full, but were public comments on the agenda?
Correct. We are actually out of time for that. But if you have any comments, please email them to me so that we can share your comments with the respect.
I don't think that's the point. The point is that it should be accommodating. I know I can do that. I have done that and I will do that.
Okay.
But it should be accommodated. Because
and so that's could on you the agenda. Could you make a short question, please, for Mr. Zarbo?
No, I have nothing to comment about him, but I did have a public comment. Now I'm not going to be able to make it.
Okay.
And I'm not happy about that.
Sorry about that.
Rico is also saying to Anu that he will send an email.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Rico. Well, Mr. Zarbo, thank you for your presentation. I know the committee would like to contact you further, and they have in the presentation your email, so they'll be able to communicate with you. I will share your contact information with Barbara. We have only 1 more minute left. Any last comments?
Okay, thank you so much. You all have a good night. Stay safe and take care of yourselves.
Okay, thank you.
You too.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Excellent meeting.
All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Moved.
Hearing no objections, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
Tina. Thank you.
Next Monday.
Thank you.
Excellent meeting.
Thank you. Have a great evening, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. You too.
Thank you. You too, Anu.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anu.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you, Carrie.
Anu, can I ask, we have only sporadically heard from Elver. Is he okay?
Elver did attend the meeting, the full committee meeting. Okay. Yeah, he did. I have not heard from him otherwise.
Okay.
If he has any questions or comments during the meeting, he emails them to me and then I state them as I have done in past.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Elver.
You're welcome. Sure. Have a great evening, everyone. Mary Beth and Carrie, you're good to go. Thank you for your work.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.